Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
You have offended
this podcast,
and you have offended
the entire movie making community.
This is a 10. The task 13.
You're 2 minutes late, dude.
Ah, come on. I couldn't find a place.
And welcome once again to You Have Offended This Podcast. We watch martial arts movies. My name is Mike McCarron, and with me, as always, is a man who was once in a half shell, but that was in a painting. Chad Lindsay, how you doing, man?
Yeah, I was that naked chick riding a clam.
right?
Do you remember that? Remember Carl? Hey, Homer, what's the matter? Ain't you ever seen a naked chick riding a clam before?
There's nothing I can't pull back to The Simpsons. There's really not.
Well, that's the thing. I didn't even know that was coming. But, I mean, it's just like, yeah, here it comes. The Mindy Simmons episode. But
Mindy Simmons. Oh, my God. That's hilarious. Yes, we are hitting Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, the original from 1990 today. I'm actually kind of excited about this. I didn't mind going back watching this. I found it a little dated, but it was a fun watch, man.
I think this works. I think it works so much better than the other attempts. Like, after this film, in this little trilogy, they had, you know, part two, The Secret of the Ooze, and then they had part three. But this one is clearly the best. And
oh, yeah.
There are a lot of reasons why, because, you know, a lot of people felt that the movie was too dark, too violent. But I think it strikes the perfect tone. Like, I really do think that this movie holds up, and I think it, you know, for what it is, it fires on all four cylinders. It's consistent, and I had a good time.
Yeah, I had a good time, too. And, I mean, people agreed, because this movie had a relatively small budget. This was the most successful independent movie right up until Blair Witch Project came out.
Yeah.
Like, this had a budget of $13.5 million, which is, like, considering what you're getting, that's crazy that this only had a $13.5 million budget the way it looks.
I actually thought it was a bit smaller, but that's fine because it's still a very, very small film. And honestly, when you compare it to the Michael Bay remakes, yeah, like the turtles were like hulking and, you know, they were a lot less fun and playful. But I was actually quite amazed at the facial expressions and the mouth movements that they got out of these foam suits. really impressed. And
yeah, these animatronic helmets are for 1990, they're pretty friggin' impressive.
Oh, like, I couldn't build one today, so, you know.
Hell,
like,
no.
Hey, for 1990, it's pretty good. It's like, hey, man, you could fucking give me a bunch of metal and some screws and some fucking wires, and I'd never be able to. A
couple solenoids. I'd be like, what's a solenoid? What does this do?
I'd fucking terrify everybody because it would just be on fire, and all the kids would be like, ah, Jesus, what the fuck? But
it would look like that Elmo, that Tickle Me Elmo doll that someone lit on fire in that meme. Like, oh my God.
I think this is my favorite. The martial arts are surprisingly good. The weapons
were surprisingly
good. And that's the thing with the other two subsequent films. They were like, can these ninjas not use weapons? That's really violent. And, you know, and I like how they had very different characters.
Yep.
You know, Raphael being kind of like the angry one, Mikey being kind of the playful, innocent one. I think they did a solid job, and I really enjoyed going back to this.
Yeah, me too. And like I said, everybody kind of agreed because worldwide gross on this was just under $202 million.
Well, yeah, and we were kind of in that. This, I think another thing that this film did well is kind of we were in that age where, like, I would have been 20. No. I would have been 18.
1990, I would have been 19 when this came out. Yeah,
I was 18 when this came out. So when this came out, I was not a child, right? But I wasn't a man, right? I was kind of in that in-between phase, and like there was the comic books.
You were in
the,
your Britney Spears phase.
Yeah, I was in my Britney Spears. I was dating Justin Timberlake.
Right? Not a girl, I mean, not yet a woman.
I enjoyed it because I think it hits for the older kids as well. And I know a lot of people said it was violent, but I don't find the violence in this disturbing at all. But I mean, like, but I was like 14 watching Freddy Krueger and shit, so I thought
exactly.
It was pretty tame.
Like,
so
the violence in this, I think it's violent to people who don't see violence ever.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, we grew up watching Atlantic Grand Prix Wrestling and WWF, and like,
yeah,
dudes were getting smashed. Like,
oh yeah, like we watched.
There was blood everywhere and chairs smashed. Like, come on, son. Like,
Roddy Piper and Cowboy Bob Orton tied the
Haney right?
kid to a chair and beat the shit out of him and then shaved his head. Like, they're basically torturing a little person on fucking matinee television on a Saturday, right? And you're just like,
so you
oh,
get
well.
A bunch of foam turtles kicking each other in the air. You're like, oh, come on, man. Like,
but I mean, at the same time, it's just like, oh, what are you going to take your kid to see? Oh, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. And it's like, oh, it was violent. Yeah, well, what the fuck do you, what do you expect, lady? Yeah.
They're mutants. They're ninjas. They're turtles. Like, come on, son.
Yeah. It's ticking all the boxes there, Francine.
Taking them all. So, yeah, this is pretty decent. I like the opening sequence here is pretty cool.
Yeah.
With, you know, the April O'Neil news report here, Judith Hogue. This is her one and only appearance in the Ninja Turtles universe. She apparently did not really dig the violence and didn't like the suits and stuff like that. But she's good in the movie. Like, she plays the character well.
First, I will say something nice. I will say, yeah, she does a good job. B, what were you thinking? Like, you showed up to the audition. You took the job, so... I heard that she was hard to work with. She didn't want to wear April's...
The yellow jumpsuit.
Yellow jumpsuit. And, you know, it was just like, oh, this movie's violent and all this stuff. So, I mean, hey, man, like, there's lots of people that want to act. Lots of people looking for a break. So don't take a job and then snub your nose at it.
Yeah, exactly. Like, if you're gonna back out, then back out and let somebody else who wants to do it be there. But all that said, for what she does in the movie, she does it really well.
No, you know, you're 100% right.
And at the same time she was doing this movie, she was doing Cadillac Man with Robin Williams.
Oh, right on.
Exact same year. And Robin Williams was a big Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles fan and gave her a bunch of, like, the comic books as source material for her to kind of check it out and look at it.
She obviously ignored it.
And she obviously ignored it, yeah. So.
Oh, here's a gift from Robin Williams. Let me toss it away. But
let me throw this into the garbage.
They do a half-decent opening scene. Like, you know, they're showing... all of the news reports intercut with all of the robberies that are taking place and stuff like that.
Thievery and shenanigans.
And it is kind of, I heard that they ran out of money, so they actually didn't get to do the opening scene that they wanted to because it was such a low, low, low budget movie. And
yes.
They didn't have the money to shoot the opening scene. So that's why you get this kind of wallet being lifted and then passed to fucking Shredder in an alley, which is kind of gore, you know, it's kind of
dorky.
It's just like,
yeah,
fuck, nobody sees this guy. Like, he's out on the sidewalk.
Nobody sees this weirdo in a snakeskin blade suit. Like, come on. Man.
Yeah.
It's like,
but anyway, but it does work though. It does give you that, you know, there's a crime syndicate and, you know, they're all kicking money up to, you can see Shredder's hand and going to
yes.
this movie, you know who Shredder is, despite the fact that they do a good job at introducing him as well.
Well, and they ran out of money as well, like you said, when April walks out of the news studio here. She's wearing her yellow raincoat, which is an homage to her jumpsuit. And she sees the rat and freaks out. But then she sees the kids kind of jacking the news van. And the lights go out. Like, you see the sort of the initial manhole cover come up a little bit.
Yeah.
And the sigh goes up and hits the light and knocks the light out. And then you just hear... and all the violence of the turtles, and then all the kids are just tied up, and it's kind of you gotta be have your eyes open here because you see Sam Rockwell
as the head thug
there, and I think this is his second movie. He did a couple TV shows, but his second movie, so early Sam Rockwell here. But when the light went out and it's all black and you hear the fighting, and then the lights from the police car, I believe, come in, and all the teenagers are tied up. They did that because they didn't have money to choreograph another fight scene.
Well, so honestly, it works because Ninja,
I was going to say that it's actually better.
Yeah, Master of the Shadows. Just let it warm up, you know, like just give it a little bit of time. And I thought it was great. I like how he threw the Sai into the light, which is something, you know, a ninja would do instead of like,
ninja turtle.
Know, like the dudes fighting out in the open in a field on a cliff wearing,
yep.
wearing a red yeah. ninja uniform against green trees. So
a little callback there to Enter the Ninja.
Yeah. But I mean, you know, it's good. And then even when we get to the title sequence, you know, it starts out with they're showing their shadows on the wall. They actually haven't shown the turtles and you can hear them talking. And then they kind of jump out and they start doing gnarly, excellent, bossa nova or whatever, all their little things.
All their little catchphrases.
Yeah, all their things. And honestly, I think they look good. Like, these are good costumes. Like, for
they are.
For I know everyone's
yeah,
kind of spoiled,
are.
But I prefer this just because I like that they're actually in that environment. And I like that they're in that world, despite the fact that, you know, a lot of people might think that it's fake and cheesy and corny. But I prefer a guy in a suit. Like, it's just me.
Yeah, it's like it's seeing a practical effect versus a CG effect, right? I kind of dig the practical.
Yeah, I dig it too. And I'm not trying to be the old man. Like, everything was better. Kit Kat used to be bigger, you know? Like, I'm not saying anybody who prefers CGI is wrong. I'm just saying, like, for me, my tastes are, I like the suits. I just do. And I love the animatronics because I think that takes it to a level of realism that, you know, allows me to willfully suspend my disbelief.
Yes. Yeah, I like it too. I like it a lot. It's cool that Raphael's all bummed and annoyed that he lost his Sai and he saw April take it.
Yeah.
The other three guys are like, yeah, Master Splinter, we did awesome. We went out there and we kicked all. We fought well.
We fought well, yeah. I actually
But Raph
have,
is all bummed.
I actually have my Sai. When I saw this movie, I liked Raphael the best, so I went out and bought a pair of Sai from Asian World of Martial Arts at a Black
nice.
Belt magazine. And I bought them in 1990, and I still have them. So out of
really?
Respect with this movie, yeah, it's sitting on the couch right here in my office, right
nice.
Here next to me. I'm like, yeah, look at this.
And I like the practical Splinter here when they get back down into their little lair.
Oh,
this, and Splinter looks cool, man.
He looks good. And the other thing that I'll say is, you know, the way that they do the lighting and the light wraps in this movie, I love how they're always half lit and half obscured. And that looks amazing, especially on Splinter, because like half of his face is shadow and then half is lit. And I really like how they played with light and shadow in this, which are two main themes in the film, light and shadow, and of course, fathers.
Absolutely.
I think they did a great job. I like the puppets.
Yeah, I like it too. So they order a pizza here. Splinter chucks the book at Mikey. And they want to get their pizza here and they get their little lecture from Splinter and stuff. It's a cool little scene. I like it.
Yeah, it kind of sets them all up and then, you know, like they're all having a good time and then Raph is like, "I got to get out of here." Like he's clearly angry that he lost his Sai and can't let it go. And, you know, you got three turtles having a good time and one turtle that just, he's pissed off all the time. He's an angry turtle.
He ain't having it. He's in his, well, he's a teenager. He's angsty.
Yeah, exactly.
He's listening to a lot of Alanis Morissette. And,
yeah, a little, well, my Chemical Romance.
My kids,
would be kind of like,
a lot,
you know,
a lot of Counting Crows.
And all. if they made this in 2010, Raphael would be listening to My Chemical Romance.
And then we get the two turtles here, Mike and Donatello here, waiting for the pizza to get delivered.
Yeah.
The pizza delivery guy is the guy that plays Michelangelo.
Yeah, which is really cool. Like, they gave a lot of the guys in this, because they're in the suits, like, hours at a time, and those suits were really uncomfortable. Like, the actors lost, like, 20 pounds over the course of the shoot because they were just sweating so much in those goddamn things. So, you know,
oh
it was nice,
God, yeah.
nice that they, you know, gave them a little bit part there.
Yeah, they all have a little appearance in the movie at some point.
Yeah.
And it's cool that they gave, this guy's name is Michelin Sisti, and he's the pizza Domino's guy here. So he gets a little gypped off because he's, what is he, a minute late or 30 seconds
yeah,
later?
Yeah, he's 2 minutes late.
On his half-hour delivery.
Yeah. I don't know if they do that anymore because I know that Domino's in, there was a pizza delivery guy that was just like speeding across town because he didn't want to lose his money. and like hit somebody, and then he was like, "Yeah, well, I was trying to make it there in under 30 minutes." And,
yeah, that's a good way to that's a good way to cause accidents and get people killed.
Yeah, yeah. So I think Domino's was like, "Hey, we're not doing that anymore."
It was funny. Apparently, after this movie, Pizza Hut had this big Ninja Turtle marketing campaign.
Yeah,
even though it's Domino's in the movie. So they kind of...
Was that for the second movie, though? I think it might have been for...
Oh, was it for two?
The
I don't
Secret
know.
Of the Ooze. Part two came out, like, the following year, because this movie made that piss pot full of money. So they were like, hey, let's do that again.
That's right.
And made part two.
So Raph comes out of the theater here after seeing what was supposed to be Batman. And he sees the two thugs grab that lady's purse.
Oh, it was supposed to be Batman?
Yeah, originally he was supposed to come out of that theater and kind of mumble to himself and say something like, cool car, stupid suit, or something like that. Like, make some quip about the Batman movie, because that was right around the same time. Like, I think Batman came out the year before.
Yeah, it did.
And, he was supposed to make some, like, oh, that was a cool car, but kind of a dumb suit, and make some quip about the Batman suit. So, kind of funny, but I think they changed that. And then he sees the guys take the purse, and he trips them and shows them the sigh in his pocket, and the guys are like, what in the hell? And this is where we get the first appearance of Casey Jones.
Honestly, I know he's supposed to be obscured in shadows, but I'd be freaking out far more at his face than the fact that he's got a sigh.
It's a giant turtle. I'd freak the hell out.
Yeah, it's a giant turtle. Casey Jones is not bad in this, and he was actually removed from part two because parents thought that he was terrifying.
Which he's not.
Scary and violent, they said.
I mean, he's violent because he's hitting dudes with hockey sticks and cricket bats and shit. But, I mean,
yeah,
this is one of those young kids movies, really, where there's no blood. I don't think there's any blood in this movie at all, is there?
No. Like, I mean, you
it's
know.
It's cartoon.
I was, like, you know, years before this, like, you know, 5 years before this, I'm watching all the ninja movies, right?
Yeah.
So that's why it's just, to me, I didn't find this film violent at all. I think it's totally fine to see that type of physical violence, especially if you're giving lessons on good and evil. I think it's perfectly okay.
Yeah, exactly. And that, like, does he punch Raphael around? Yeah, a little bit, but Raph gets some shots in on Casey. Like, it's a fair fight, and nobody gets hurt in the end. They both run away. Although, with the exception here of this is one of the scenes where Raph goes at Casey with the bat. Casey's got, you know, the other bat.
Casey
and then
at the bat.
Casey at the bat, right? No, I was trying not to say that. But Casey takes out the cricket bat.
Yes.
And Raph makes some joke about, hey, you got to be in England to play cricket, or, you know, something like that. But he does that big uppercut swing on Raph and hits him kind of up into the air and backwards into that trash can.
Yeah, he sends him flying, which, you know.
He sends him flying, like, whomp. But when Raph goes backwards, when the stuntman did that fall into the garbage can, the animatronic head caved in. And you can see when he comes out of the trash can, the guy, the stuntman, when he comes out of the trash can, he kind of grabs at his face. He's like, ah, like kind of touches his nose. The animatronic suit, the helmet, when it caved in, it broke his nose.
Oh, my God, really?
Yeah, yeah. And so they had to, like, redo the whole Raphael head because when he flew backwards into the can like that, it caved it in. So kind of a fun little thing. It's one of the stuntman injuries. One of the Hong Kong guys got injured later on, and that's where Ernie Reyes Jr. came in and took over for him. I'm not sure which turtle he played, but he took over for one of the four stuntmen for one of the turtles.
I used to know. I forget now.
Yeah, I can't remember, but he was in there. And Raph runs away and jumps over the hood of this taxi cab here. And the passenger in the back of the taxi cab is Josh Pyce, the guy that plays Raphael.
Yeah, that's cool. He got a little spot, too.
Yeah, quick little shot of him there. He's the only turtle, the only guy that plays a turtle in the suit and does the voice.
Yes, I did know that. Yeah. I think I read that in one of the magazines, like, years ago. But, yeah, I actually like Raph's voice. I actually liked him. And I actually liked the next scene where he comes in and Splinter talks to him about his anger and his attitude and his inability to share his problems with his brothers. Like, it's actually a really nice scene, and it's lit really, really well. Like,
yeah.
You know, Splinter lights a candle, and the way that they're shot and just that glow from the candle and whatever light is off to the side to simulate that candlelight.
Yeah.
You can see the reflections in their in the puppet's eyes. Like, you can really, really see it. And I thought it was great.
It is.
I mean, you can talk about this movie being violent, but for kids, it does give a lot of very strong moral lessons and direction on top of it.
Yeah, it does. And you can see the respect there, too, because, you know, when Splinter says, hey, come and sit by me, and Raph's like, oh, come on, man, can this wait till morning? Like, ah.
Yeah.
And he's, no, no, get over here and sit down with me right now. And he does.
Yeah.
He shuts up and he goes over and he sits down and he takes the lesson, like you said. And yeah, the lighting's awesome. The black background complete with just the single candle. It's really good. It's an awesome scene.
Yeah, there's another one coming up that I really like too that we'll talk about it when, you know, it gets there. But
I do like, just to quickly go back for 1 second, when Raph goes over the hood of the cab and the guy goes, what was that? And the cab driver goes, I don't know, look like a big giant turtle or something in a trench coat.
In a trench coat, yeah.
You're going to LaGuardia, right? Like, it's New York. Yeah. He just blows it off and, like,
it's New York. Yeah.
He doesn't give a shit. He's so like, crazy. You're going to LaGuardia, right? Yeah. All right.
Like a big giant turtle in a trench coat.
Just doesn't care.
Yeah.
Great. And then we get the scene with April here and talking about, you know, I want to do this story, the whatever it is. And this is Danny, right?
Yeah, that's Danny, Charles'
son, Danny, yeah. This is the only place he ever appears. This movie is, he's never back in any other ninja anything.
No, he's not. I looked him up on IMDb. He's got a couple of credits for writing and producing, not very many.
Oh, no way, does he?
But yeah, he's never back in the franchise now.
No, just like April. I do like this police chief guy. He just yells his ass off all the time. He's pretty great.
Yeah, he kind of reminds me of like a fucking real life Fred Flintstone, but yeah, he's actually pretty good.
Yeah, he is good. I like him. Well, what it means, Ms. O'Neill, is we've got everything working. Shut up. How about you shut up? Why don't you stop asking me questions? Yeah, he's very Jackie Gleason kind of stuff. But the turtles then see her on TV there, and they're all, oh my God. Well, at least Michelangelo's in love with her. And they kind of move on. You see the first, like, I guess this is the first real shot of Shredder, where the backlit thing with his helmet, the cool helmet that he has.
Yeah, and you know he's evil because he's got, like, a wall of TVs, because that was always a thing for villains from 1990 all the way up to, well, even the architect in
The Matrix 2. The Matrix.
Like, you know, here we go. There's a wall of TVs. This person must be evil and tied into the, it's before the internet was really huge.
That's
you only
right,
need one
know, right?
device now, buddy.
Like, you need your phone, really.
15 TVs.
And then we get the first.
Yeah. But I guess it's a lot less, intimidating. Just like, you know, a guy sitting just looking at his iPhone scrolling through.
And we kind of get the first shot of the foot soldiers here in the subway. The Foot Clan coming out and going after April here. And the one guy is like, you know, I got something here for you or something. And he just opens his hand and cracks her in the face.
Your mouth may yet bring you much trouble, Miss O'Neill. I deliver a message. Shut it.
Yeah.
And I was like, whoa.
Yeah. Honestly, I thought that was great. I have something for you. He opens his hand, and it's empty. And you're like, oh, there's nothing. Slap.
And then he just knocks her cold.
Shut it. And I was like, oh, that's a good way. Yeah, that's true. These guys do.
They look pretty cool. They're little webbed eye covers.
And then, of course, she's just like, he's like, we've been waiting for you, Miss O'Neill. And she's like, what's wrong? Am I late on my
kind of a
good payment? Line. Which is, like, weird. Yeah. And then, he's like, shut it.
Shut it.
And then, they just kind of
they knock her out, but then
around.
Raph comes out and lays the beats on them a little bit. Apparently, because the suits were really heavy and kind of hard to move in, like, the stunt guys that worked out in them and did the fight scenes did a good job, but they had to shoot apparently at like 23 or sometimes 22 frames per second and then ramp it back up to make it look smooth or make it look like the suits weren't as heavy as they are.
Well, I don't mind that as long as it comes out good on screen. And I think it came out good on the screen. So they look pretty quick. Like, I'm actually surprised, like, later, especially Raphael's rooftop scene, like, he looks like he is just boogieing. But I actually love, I don't know how they did the sewers. Obviously, they look massive, and it might just be like one stretch that they built, or I don't know if they used a real sewer a real set, but the sewer and the lair, they look really good. For a low-budget, yeah, independent film, it looks great, especially when Raph is kind of...
Yeah.
He's still a kid, right? He's not experienced. He leads the foot right, yeah, back to their lair just because he's not... That's Raphael's biggest problem is Raphael, yeah, doesn't think he acts... And it catches up to him, you know, several times.
Yeah, you see the Foot Clan film. Guys peeking through and being like, oh, these guys, ah, all right. And, like, they figure out who they are and where they are. And then that, like you said, that becomes an issue for these guys moving forward. After April loses her absolute shit here when Splinter wakes her up and she, yeah, sees a giant rat and four giant turtles. she sells this freak out pretty good.
Yeah, yeah, she really does, because... I don't know if I would scream and say, oh my God, I'm having a dream. I think I'd just probably just sit completely still and just look from turtle to turtle to splinter to turtle and, you know, just, yeah, slowly piss myself, right, and
just
and
let
not
the
pay
smell
any attention
gently
to
waft
it.
Like, out into the room.
I would know that I was pissing my pants. Yeah, yeah, just be like sitting, well, there like, okay,
I guess I'm,
well, here we are.
Gonna die, so this is it.
I guess I'm going to die. thanks a pant load, Chet.
Yeah, she freaks out here. I mean, this made me think of that joke. I forget which comedian said it, but it was like taking a little kid to Disneyland seems like a good idea until you realize that from the perspective of a four-year-old, Mickey is a seven-foot rat. Like, it's terrifying, right?
Yeah. Like, but when Splinter starts talking to April... You can see the other ninjas in the background, and he starts telling his story. And this is so fucking Jim Henson.
Because oh, it's
they
super
actually,
Jim Henson. It's
they
Fraggle
actually
Rock shit.
They dim the light behind him. Like, they keep the key light on Splinter, fine, but they just dim the background light. So all of a sudden, the entire background and the turtles behind him just wash away to an infinite black background.
Yeah.
And then now they're telling the story. And they're actually not in the layer from the audience's perspective. They're just in this black background. But, yeah, the whole section of him, like, collecting the turtles in the coffee can and him doing all that stuff, I thought it was great. It's so stupid in some ways, but it's so fantastic because he's like, you know, this little rat. And he's just like, then I found four turtles swimming in some ooze. I gathered them up in a coffee can. And I was like, why the fuck did you lift it? I don't know. Can't,
I don't
care.
Stop talking. Yeah, how about you stop them? Talking?
Yeah. And it's just like, yeah. And then one of them spoke. I mean, I thought it was cute.
The little baby turtles. It is very Fraggle Rock, but it's great.
I'm sure the kids loved that.
Like, oh, yeah, like this, again, it's a kid's movie, right? Like, the violence isn't bad. And I like scenes like this. Apparently this, I'm sure you know this, but for people listening, there's ostensibly a fairly big crossover between the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movie and the Daredevil comics from Marvel. And the toxic ooze that transformed the turtles into Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles is supposedly the same toxic ooze spill incident that blinded
Matt Murdock.
Yeah,
oh, that's so cool.
Blinded Matt Murdock. And if you think about it, Matt Murdock in Daredevil, his mentor's name is Stick. Mm. And in the Turtles, it's Splinter. Matt Murdock as Daredevil has to fight the Hand, whereas the Turtles fight the Foot Clan.
The Foot, yeah.
So
yeah.
They did that on purpose as kind of an homage to Daredevil, and they kind of showing they live in the same city in the same universe, although Matt Murdock nor Daredevil are never mentioned specifically because of copyright and
copyright,
shit like
of
that.
Course, yeah.
But they're supposed to be in the same city in the same incident and stuff. So it's kind of a cool little crossover there. But yeah, they finish that, and they take April back out of the sewers here. And she's like, I'd invite you in, but I kind of don't have anything but frozen pizza. And then they're like, bloop, what? Pizza?
Yeah.
You said the magic word. What's happening? Let's go.
Yeah.
It's pretty, you know, it's corny, but I like it. For the movie, it fits. It fits with the costumes. It fits with the turtles. I dig it. I think it's funny. And then they're up in the apartment just laughing they fool heads off, having a grand old time.
Yeah, they get up to the apartment. They're like Michelangelo's doing impressions and stuff like that.
That's right.
Having a laugh. I thought the scene is good. I think that's one of the things, like, I'm totally fine with them doing kind of like fun and silly things because tonally it fits the movie, right? Like, it just fits it. So when they do these character and relationship building moments, I think that they're really important.
Yeah, well, because they're teenagers, they're right? They have to be.
Yeah. When they come back to her apartment in just a few moments.
Yes.
And it is... See, this is where it goes from playful, and I think this is where they said it was kind of dark, because they leave April's apartment. She's like, oh, do you really have to go? Like, they build a friendship. They go back to their lair. The place is smashed.
Splinter's gone.
And Splinter's gone. And they do a 360 pan of Raph. And
yeah.
It just showcases... He blows Splinter off a lot. Like, you know, he's like, ah, I don't want to talk to you, Splinter. But he's the one that takes it the hardest.
Yeah.
Right? So, and he just loses it, right? And honestly, it's good acting. Like, I feel this rubber suit's pain.
Yeah.
Like, when they do it. Because it spins around 360. It does, like, a camera shake. And he's just like, ah.
Yeah. Goes into his mouth.
Like, ah! It's emotional. And it's great. And then... they cut back to April opening the door, and they're all, like, really upset. And then Leonardo just mentions Splinter. Like, they don't know what to do.
Yeah.
They're teenagers, so they go to the first adult that they know, which is April, right? So,
and I like the suit movement. The when Leonardo says Splinter, like, the movement of the lips of the suit is really good. Like,
that looked really good.
Yeah, I thought that was cool, so... And we get them waking up in the morning here in April's apartment, and somebody comes to the door. I like this scene because someone comes to the door, and it's her boss.
Yeah, Charles.
And Danny. And she's like, you guys have to... And she turns around, and they're gone.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, wow, that's cool. All right.
Yeah, Colt could have picked up a few lessons from them.
Right? But it is pretty cool here. Like, he comes in to have a chat with her, and Danny's kind of snooping a little bit. And... there's that cool scene at one point where Danny looks and sees, I think it's Leo.
The reflection under the table, yeah.
And then he's like, what? And then he looks back again and he's gone.
Yeah.
And I think, is it Donatello that's in the shower?
Yeah, and he jumps up and up to the ceiling and does his little suction cup to the ceiling or whatever.
Yeah, he does the Uma Thurman in Kill Bill up in the rafters trying to avoid go-go. Sorry, I'm having a delightful beer.
Oh, good for you.
Yeah, it's really good.
I am also.
Are you? What are you having?
Belgian Moon.
It's
nice. So humid. I
like Belgian.
I always get something with citrus. I find it cuts the humidity in my mouth.
Nice. I get kind of the same thing. I have it's Cowbell Brewer called Absent Landlord. It's a Kolsch, and it's got kind of a nice citrusy flavor to it. It's really good.
Absent Landlord. They should come out with an Absent Father.
Absent
what
Father.
What the fuck?
Deadbeat Dad.
Deadbeat Dad. But the thing that I like about this is the movie does a good job at driving plot points forward without ridiculous leaps of faith or by characters doing something exceedingly stupid.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like, sometimes you get a film and they're like, oh, well, now the bad guys have to find out where the good guy's lair is, and they're like, oh, well, why don't we just have this guy in the movie that's been really smart throughout the film? Let's have him just do something completely out of character and do something dumb.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So they kind of have to do those things, but the fact that Danny just gets a glimpse of Leonardo later when Shredder's like, I got to find these turtles. Danny puts his hand up and says, oh, I just happened to see a 6-foot turtle.
Funnily enough.
Yesterday. But I actually like how they gave him just a little flash, so they were still able to do their ninja stuff. They fucked up a little bit because of the reflection of the mirror.
Yep.
And now that leads the Foot Clan right to April. So it's a nice little setup. I mean, it's simple, but it works.
It works really well. And then Danny runs away, goes back to the child labor hideout here.
Which is so, dude, I have to say, I sort of cut you off.
No, please.
As soon as they go, they cut to the outside of the building, and the first cut to that kid playing pool, smoking a cigar.
Yep.
Like, that is so fucking Pinocchio.
That's right out of Pinocchio, yep.
That is right. Like, I had forgot about that scene. So on the rewatch, I was just like, holy fucking Christ, that's so awesome, right? Like, it's right out of Pinocchio.
Yep, absolutely. And it's cool. This cement factory, this building that they're going into is an abandoned cement factory where they filmed this kid's lair thing. Was also Dino Hatton in Super Mario Brothers. That's the same location.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and it was also Top Dollar's club from The Crow.
From The Crow, Top Dollar. Oh, my God.
Yeah, that's this. I don't think they ever call him Top Dollar in the movie, but the main bad guy.
I don't think they do.
The main bad guy in The Crow. This was his nightclub, is this actual set here.
I fucking love the soundtrack on this. Like, soon as they cut to it, they got some, like, hopping, popping music going on in there.
It's pretty
you
great.
You got all these kids smoking, playing video games.
Shooting pool, riding skateboards.
Fucking shooting pool. There's a roulette wheel. Like, there's kids
fucking
playing.
Oh, it's crazy. They're playing
roulette.
NARC, that old video game NARC.
Yeah. There's a bunch of old video games in there.
It's pretty awesome.
And there's Sam Rockwell, introducing the new kids. And they're basically just bringing in, as it's shown later, like, kids that don't have families, or specifically kids that don't have father figures in their lives.
Yes.
They're basically bringing them there, giving them exactly what kids want, but nothing as to what kids need, and basically kind of brainwashing and gaslighting these kids into becoming a ninja gang of television thieves.
Right? You know, foot soldiers.
Foot soldiers. It's good. Like, you know, and then they kind of bring them in with the cigarettes and the skateboards, but then they basically move them over to the combat and, you know, make them full-fledged soldiers.
Yeah, I like it. They get Tatsu here, fights a guy, and does pretty
He's
well.
He's awesome.
He beats his ass. But it's good.
Oh, yeah.
Tatsu's a good character. That's Toshishiro Obata. He's been in a bunch of movies. He's actually been in, he was in China O'Brien briefly. He was in China O'Brien 2. And he's actually going to be in two more movies that we're doing this season. He's in Showdown in Little Tokyo.
Yeah.
And he's also in The Hunted, which we're doing later.
Oh, man, The Hunted. Yeah, that I haven't watched that in so long. I'm excited.
Yeah.
But yeah, so he's amazing. He's really good in this. Like, he doesn't say much because I don't think he's really fluent in English at this point.
Yeah.
And I think there's a couple of moments where they do ADR and they do a voiceover for him.
Yeah, yeah. His voice is Michael McConaughey.
Oh, okay. Because he's got an incredible screen presence.
He's great.
Second only to Shredder, who comes in the building momentarily. Very Darth Vader.
Very Darth Vader, yeah. He's another guy. That's James Saito plays Shredder, but his voice is David McCharron. So they dub him in as well. But again, good screen presence on both of those guys. Like, for not talking, or I guess they are talking, but they just be dubbed after.
Mm.
But yeah, great screen presence, and he gives the speech about where he makes that one guy the foot soldier and gives him his hood and stuff.
Yes.
And, you know, you do this, you can come on and be a foot soldier and, you know, the highest honor, blah, blah, blah. And giving them the spiel to keep them loyal and stuff. And this is where, like, they're looking for the turtles, and Danny puts his hand up and is like, hey, man, I saw a giant-ass turtle. How about you help me out?
Yeah. Yeah. But, I mean, he literally says, I am your father.
You are here because the outside world rejects you. This is your family. I am your father.
Like, yeah, exactly. You know, I was like, ooh, that's Darth.
Because, you know, Splinter's the father figure of the good guys. This guy's the father figure to the bad guys. Danny's having problems with his father and, you know, kind of has to choose which path he wants to go down. And right now he's going down the path of the foot. But the other thing that I found interesting was, you know, when he brings that guy up to give him his, what's the term? Is it Dobby?
For which one, sorry?
Mask. When he brings the kid up to put the mask on him.
Maybe. I honestly can't remember, dude. I'm sorry.
When he's got that giant fucking double claw on his left hand. So when he goes to put it on his head, I'm like, Jesus. You almost
gave him an ear pierce.
To coin Legere, who used to call this guy Filet-O Face, he almost took his face off with those fucking claws. But it's unbelievable.
That's hilarious. They were apparently for Tatsu, they were thinking about getting, if you remember from the perfect weapon, Professor Toru Tanaka.
Yes.
Was considered for Tatsu.
I like him, but I think it worked out way better the way it was. I think this was the right choice.
I think this is the right choice too. He's a better henchman.
Well, Tanaka is not a ninja. He's a giant
lumbering Hulk of a man.
If you're talking stealth, that's like putting ninja tabby boots on a rhino and slapping its ass and sending it into a goddamn Sobeys.
It's like putting a sumo wrestler in a ninja suit and go ahead, sneak into the castle. Go. See what happens.
Yeah.
It's not gonna work. So we get April talking to the other newscaster trying to explain the whole ninja thing and the Foot Clan, and she's like, the Foot Clan? She's like, yeah, I know, it sounds stupid, but you gotta let me keep going here. So she gives them the lowdown on the Foot Clan and the whole thing, and the Turtles are back at her apartment. Raph is pissed, and he goes up on the roof here and does his little annoyed Kevin Bacon slam dance routine.
Mm-hmm.
And Casey Jones is up on the roof, and he's sees Raph on the other building. There was a bunch of crazy people who were looked at to play Casey Jones.
Really?
Like, dude, the list of possibles for Casey Jones is nuts. Listen to this list of possibles for Casey Jones. Johnny Depp.
Oh.
Keanu Reeves, Christian Slater, Lou Diamond Phillips, Emilio Estevez, Kiefer Sutherland, Jason Patrick, Brian Austin Green, Brian Austin Green, Alex Winter, River Phoenix, and best of all, Benny Urquidez and Richard Norton were all considered for Casey Jones.
Okay, out of that list, legitimately, no disrespect to anybody on that list, I would have loved to see Richard Norton take that part.
Richard Norton would have been the bomb. Back in 90? Dude.
Yeah, 1990, Richard Norton would... Yeah, I think that's the winner in that list. Like, I wouldn't do 1990 Keanu.
No, he's... Well, and that's the same as Alex Winter. Like, it's Bill and Ted time, right? Like, that's not working. Yeah. And same as Johnny Depp. Like, he's a little too pretty boy.
Yeah, like Johnny Depp, like 6 years prior, would have done, A Nightmare on Elm Street.
Yeah. Christian Slater is too small physically, I think.
I like Christian Slater, and I've seen him do some stuff that surprised me, like acting... wise.
Oh yeah,
like,
me too.
I can't see him doing it.
I could see Kiefer Sutherland doing it
because he's got Sutherland that dark Lost Boy. Would have done it.
Lost Boys or Stand By Me kind of energy.
If you could get him to do it right, like if you could give him the direction that he needed, I think 1990 Bruce Willis would have been a solid choice.
Oh, that would have been good too.
Just from the acting ability, because. This would have been just a little bit before The Last Boy Scout. Do you remember how nonchalant he was in Last Boy Scout, going around, getting mouthy, punching people in the face, like talking about, hey, how do you do this to a fat lady? Hey, remember he was doing all those fucking disgusting jokes. It was funny, but
it was good. Yeah, he would have been good.
I think 1990 Bruce Willis would have done a great job at that.
And they also
he'd never do it.
They also apparently looked at Benny Urquidez and Richard Norton, and Jeff Imada and James Liu were all considered to be the fight choreographers for this too.
Oh wow, yeah. Very cool!
I have to watch the credits. I didn't actually watch the credits through to see who did the fight choreography, but those four guys were considered for it. I know that.
Nice.
Anyway, then we get the Raphael rooftop fight scene with all the Foot Clan fellas, which is a good scene.
This is probably my favorite scene for martial arts. I think it's shot really well. Like, they do a close-up of Raph and they pull back and all the ninjas are sneaking up behind him.
Yeah.
He gets into, he does a couple of really dope kicks.
He's got some great wheel kicks.
He's got some, he does, three or four in a row. I can't quite remember, but I think he does, a front kick, back kick, front kick, and then a wheel kick combination, what I mean? There's a lot of guys there, but it actually looks pretty good. Like, he throws a kick in front, back, same kick, front, puts that leg down, and then he does, a 360 wheel kick type thing. I think that's how it goes.
But it's great.
It looks really, it looks as if, movie fighting, you can never do that in real life, but they make it They sell it. They make it look really good.
Yeah.
And then, of course, I like how he's like, oh, you guys must be studying from the abridged book of ninja fighting. It's so funny, right?
He's got some good lines there.
Yeah.
And you guys expect to beat me, and then 20 more guys come, and he goes, oh, good answer. Yeah.
Good answer. Yeah, he's actually good. He's my favorite. He's my favorite turtle, just because of his attitude. Like I thought he was great.
Yeah, he's good. And then they end up chucking him through the roof here, through the skylight,
which is pretty funny. But the fact that you can take a dude and throw him in, I don't know, probably what does that suit weigh? 100 pounds?
Well, it's probably
100 pounds or more.
Yeah, and it's got to be close, dude.
You can actually have him do those kicks. They're just great job. So, yeah, they eventually outnumber him. And I like how they're intercutting. Like, there's a great deal of tension as to, you know, Raph's up on the roof. And they're just, like, going through the antique shop. She's like, hey, this is my dad's antique store. And then they cut upstairs, you know, and there's just, like, fucking just the Foot Clan is just straight kicking the shit out of Raph. And then they cut down. Yeah. And as an audience member, there's enough tension there because you're just like, hey, go help Raphael.
Somebody's got to help that dude.
Symbols and little fucking toys in the antique store and stuff. And it just keeps cutting back and forth to Raph losing. And then finally they go upstairs and they just fucking smash him through the roof, which is great.
And then you get the nunchuck.
Oh, a fellow chucker, eh?
That little showdown with that.
Yeah, that was fucking cute, man.
That was good. I liked it.
They did a good job between the two of them because he's like, yeah, a fellow chucker. And I really like the rhythm and the timing because he does his move. Then Mikey does his move. He does a move. Mikey does a more impressive move. And then they cut to him and he just goes, oh. he's actually impressed with it. I thought it was good. Like, there's some good timing and some good humor in this film.
It was good, and it's impressive to be able to do the nunchuck moves in that turtle suit. Like, that's pretty impressive.
Well, yeah, like he's wearing the suit. I don't know how long it would take them to film this shit, but it's just
a good question.
Like to have him just basically be able to work with the nunchucks in the suit, and you know he's flipping it behind his back and bouncing it off the shell. So
yeah,
these guys worked hard, and the Jim Henson puppeteers worked hard. Like, you could tell that this movie was made with a shit ton of care.
Yeah.
And I think the subsequent movies were made to make money.
Yes.
And I think that's why I like this one the best.
When the director apparently came in to meet with Eastman and Laird, the two guys that wrote the Turtles comic, and they were talking to him, and he said, like, it was Steve Barron. And they were like, so what is your vision for this movie? And he basically just comics and said, well, the movie's right there.
Mm.
And they were like, okay, you're hired. Like, if you're going to use the source material properly, then good, go to it. And they did. It really seems like they stuck to the comics pretty straightforward.
Yeah, I mean, the comics are a little darker because a lot of times people saw the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Saturday morning cartoon.
Yes.
And then it's like, oh, here's a comic. And you were just like, what the fuck? Like, you know, it was, you know, a fair bit darker. But I think they did a really good middle ground. I think they created a film here that you know, is a family movie. You can bring the kids to it.
Yeah.
At any age.
Yeah.
I don't give a shit. Bring a 5-year-old to this.
Yeah, it's not right? That violent. Jesus.
They might get a little bit scared, but Jesus Christ, Cody got scared of this fucking Spiderwick Chronicles when that fucking dog rat or whatever the fuck that was came
right?
out.
Princess Bride, like, those rodents of unusual size will freak the shit out of you.
Yeah, the R-O-U-S is, man. Like, there's always something that's going to scare a kid. You don't know what it's going to be. It might be fucking mustache on the fucking henchman. I don't know.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I loved it. And then Foot Clan shows up, and we got another great fight with all the turtles.
Big-ass fight.
I like this fight, too. I thought it was fun.
This fight's good. They beat ass a little bit on the Foot Clan, and then that one guy comes in with all the axes. You're like, Jesus, what the hell happened here?
Oh, my God, yeah. Yeah, they're just
armful of axes.
They're just starting to get the other hand. Yeah, Imagine, like, you're that guy. It's just like, what do you do? I'm in the Foot Clan. Oh, are you, like, one of the frontline guys? I carry the axes. And you do what? I carry the axes.
I'm basically the Foot Clan bat boy. That's really all I do. I go to the van. I get the axes.
Yeah. It sucks. I get teased a lot. They call me the axes of evil. You know, I can't seem to shake that.
Next year, I get to kill a guy. So, you know, hey, there's that. But yeah, the one guy chops that wire and the room immediately bursts into flame. And
well, yeah, but I mean, before that, Casey Jones shows up, you know, because the turtles are there in like a wave and they're starting to kind of get worn down. And then, you know, now we get the entrance of Casey Jones and I forget what he says, something like, hey, I'm going to get you now. You pukes, yeah. Or, you know, something very, very Casey Jones. And then, you know, immediately we get the fire and they've got to escape. And, you know, Casey holds them off while they go through the trap door.
And you get the answering machine message there of April's boss firing her as the cable burns, which Casey hears.
Yeah, the cable's burning. And he's like, I know this comes as a blow as it breaks, lands on one of the Foot Clans. And Casey's like, you got that right, Chuck.
You got that right, Chuck.
I fucking love that. I love that stuff, man. I absolutely love it. Yeah. So I'm
in.
I'm on board.
Yeah, I'm in.
I'm on board.
And they leave, and Splinter is tied to the wall here, and Shredder comes in, and he's pissed, and he just smashes Splinter in the face and puts the blade up under his neck, and he's pissed.
Honestly,
at Tetsu.
I'm almost 50 years old, and when Shredder comes in and fucking forearm smashes Splinter,
yep.
I got to tell you, it made me sad and angry.
Yeah.
Like, it's like, you know, a dude in a suit smashing a fucking puppet chained to a wall, but I was just like... Oh, you son of a bitch.
You son of a bitch.
Orokosaki.
And Shredder's pissed at Tatsu.
Yeah.
So he gets annoyed, and then Tatsu's like, oh, I'm so mad. I'm so super angry. And he goes and just starts beating ass on all the Foot Clan soldiers, and he pounds the piss out of that one kid.
Yeah.
And apparently in the original script, that kid was supposed to die, but they added, you can hear him in this movie coughing and like... like, and he kind of breathes a little bit. They edited that in afterwards to make it less violent.
I think they edited in another ADRs. Like, somebody says, oh, he's going to be okay. You're going to be okay.
Yeah.
Like, I think they added another line in there. So, yeah, I can see that. I mean, if I'm taking my kid to this and they're 6 or 7, I probably wouldn't want a murder in it.
Yeah.
So, you know, I respect them for taking the murder out.
Unless you're in France where they left the murder in.
Yeah, unless you're in France where your 6-year-old's drinking a fucking wine, a wine box.
You're having a charcuterie plate and some fucking,
yeah.
And a lovely Chardonnay in the middle of the wine, in the middle of the movie.
Yeah.
What's, come on, my children need wine.
Passez-moi le vin.
Who are you to tell me that murder is not okay, huh?
Yeah.
It's probably super offensive to our thousands of French listeners. I apologize.
Hey, this podcast is in English. So.
But yeah, they left the murder in the French version, but whatever. And Danny ends up coming out here to talk to Splinter. He's like, oh, you can speak English, whatnot. And he starts, because he saw Tatsu beat the shit out of that kid, I think that kind of broke the glass a little bit for him on the how good this is.
Oh, it definitely did. Yeah, it definitely
did. He's
like,
wait a minute, what the hell am I into?
He's just like, Jesus. He's like, my dad's kind of an asshole because, you know, he's kind of like, looks like Willie Tanner from Elf. But at least he doesn't fucking kill my siblings.
Right.
So, yeah, that sets Danny all on a new path here.
Yeah. And then we leave to go to the farmhouse with April and Casey Jones. And there's a lot of cut footage from this whole farmhouse section that would have paid off a little bit later. Like, there's a lot of deleted scenes in here, but it still works.
Yeah.
It still works. Like, the relationship between Casey Jones and April kind of builds up here a little bit. The turtles are training now. They're kind of, this is their training montage. Rocky climbs up the mountain kind of area of the movie before they have their little final face off, which is pretty, it's good. I dig this little section at the farmhouse.
Well, I think that what this section does well, because I think it works that April is a reporter and she's writing in a journal, and then she does some voiceover work, And I think it's kind of nice to slow the film down because we just had several action scenes and deliver some exposition to the audience without it being overly stupid, because it's her saying a voiceover and she's basically saying, okay, this is what you've just seen and this is how they're handling it, right? Because she's like, oh, Splinter's missing and Leo feels this way and Michelangelo feels this way. And I think it's good for maybe some of the younger audiences that might not pick up on the visual cues.
Yeah.
But even for older people, I think it's good because it just kind of it's like a sorbet. It's like, okay, let's rest up. Let's reflect on what we've seen so far, and then we'll move on. It's very artistic, and April looks really pretty and freckly, and, you know, she's writing in her journal.
Doing her little drawings.
And, you know, and then it's she's lit really well. Like, you know, she's got some candlelight as she's drawing, so... You know, it's nice. It gives us a nice little rest from the action, and then we get some comedy with her and Casey, which I think it works. It's kind of goofy and dated.
Well, it's the same
it
as the Donatello and Casey Jones trying to start the old truck, and they're fucking with each other. Like, it's goofy and dated, but I like it. Like it's two dudes messing with each other, you know, and it works. It plays,
and two dudes that are. And they're messing with each other because they're trying to insult each other with letters of the alphabet consecutively, which is exactly what 10-year-old boys do.
Exactly what you and I would still do, like, if we were talking about fucking driving around.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. All right, butt brain. All right,
Clem.
Puck-ass. All right, doorknob. Like, you know, they're just going through Cuck-ass. The fucking alphabet, right? So, yeah. So, anyway, I thought it's good. It's cute. And then, of course, Raph wakes up. You know, they have their little moment. They have their, I'm sorry I said what I said. Yeah. Donatello comes in. It's good. It's good. It gives a certain amount of, you know, momentum and refreshes us and gets us ready for the next fight.
Yeah, it brings us through once he wakes up to the, everybody's happy again after the tension of, like, you know, they beat Raph half to death. And then they get to train again. Like, he goes from dead to, okay, full-on training again. Let's go. You know, it's the thing that you always say about, you know, you're either in a coma or you're completely lucid. That's what he is, right?
Oh, yeah, exactly. Because he's just like, he's completely in that fucking Mason Storm coma. And then he's just like, oh, hey, it's me, Raphael. How's Splinter doing? Oh, by the way, here's a whole bunch of other short-term memory things that I probably shouldn't know.
Now I'm going to go on the roof and yell, Splinter!
Yeah, which you probably know this too. That was originally Michelangelo's side story, and they put Raphael's voice in there, which is, they had to cut things for time.
It's
but,
good. Like, I get the compression for time. You got to make it fit in your 90-minute runtime to keep everybody's attention. So they get that. We get the cut back to the warehouse here with Shredder and Tatsu. And there's a cool little thing here. If you look in the background when they do that, sort of the pullback from looking at all the boxes, and they come up between Shredder and Tatsu's heads. You can see on one of the boxes in the background, it says Archie Comics. And apparently Archie Comics was one of the only comics companies that published Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles through the 80s and 90s. So that was a little, it's real quick.
I didn't even see it.
But you can see a sticker on one of the boxes before it. They focus in the foreground on Shredder and Tatsu, but in the background before they pull the focus, you can see Archie Comics on the side of one of the boxes.
Oh, that's cool.
It's kind of cool. They do that also earlier in the film when they first go to the kids in the hideout. And there's a bunch of boxes there, I think, that say Mirage.
Oh, yeah.
Is on one of the boxes.
Mirage. Yeah, there was an alternate ending of this.
Oh, really?
They go
yeah.
to the Mirage offices and pitch
yes,
it.
That's
yeah,
right.
Danny
that's right.
And April,
they go to Mirage. Dude. Yeah, and that's why, because the Mirage was the first comic company that published TMNT, so kind of cool. And I love the cutback to the farmhouse here, and Casey Jones is slicing carrots with a fucking samurai sword.
Yeah, katana.
It's pretty great.
Yeah.
And then April's shoulders are all sore, and Casey starts to give her a massage here. And it's a little like, you're getting a little closey-closey there, a little, whatever. And Donatello starts to kind of meditate and gets in touch sort of spiritually, psychically, or whatever, with Splinter.
Oh, that's Leo. Yeah.
Oh, that's Leo. I'm sorry. You're right.
Yeah.
They're so close. Their headbands are blue and purple, and it screws me up because they look really similar. But I should know it because Leo has the swords.
The katanas. Yeah.
The katanas.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and then he goes in and gets the other guys, and they go out by the campfire, and they're all like, get the fuck out of here. Come on, man. Like, what are we going to roast marshmallows and shit? Get out of here. Come on. And Leo's like, no, you got to try this. And again, it's kind of a cool little scene where Splinter comes up in the fire.
I fucking love this scene. Like, they
and
do.
And talks to them, and it's a good, like, father-son scene.
Yeah, he basically doesn't give them, like, he's not like, help, come get me, save me. He's basically saying goodbye to them. And
yeah,
you've got four men in foam rubber suits, but they're all crying at the end. So these actors and puppeteers, like, you've got a person in the suit doing the body, and then you've got a person running the animatronics doing the facial expressions. And they have to work as a, like, they have to coordinate and practice and train. And they do here because it legitimately looks like they're a real one person reacting. And Splinter gives him his, hey, boys, I love you. Don't ever forget that. Make sure you work together as a team, yada, 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 and then vanishes. Yep.
You're not one, you're four, so use it. It's great, man. It's a good scene. I really like it. And like you said, in the end, they're all emotional and ready to kind of, well, they do break down because a lot of they're crying at the end. And once we get that, then you get the kind of fade to black, and then the morning comes, and they're kind of ready to go get him.
Yeah, they are. They're just, I think they walk in the farmhouse and say it's time to
hit the road.
Yeah, I think they say it's time to hit the road, and then they peace out.
It's time to go back.
Yeah.
It's time to go back. And they're all standing there in their little hero poses on the grass. Let's go.
Oh, yeah,
man.
That's right. Yeah, that looked great. Yeah, because then they had the.
That was a cool pose.
Yeah, they had the sunrise coming up in the background.
Coming up behind them.
Yeah, that's a goddamn postcard shot. That was great.
Yeah. And then they come back, and it's actually kind of funny when they pull up and it's raining, and Casey Jones is like, oh, really? This is all right, I guess. This is pretty good. And then they're like, no, down here, man. And they go down in the sewer, and he's like, oh, come on, for real? Like, I got to come.
Yeah.
Jesus fucking Christ. Like, it's pretty good. And they go down into the sewer, and I forget what happens next. Somebody's in their lair, and oh yeah, that's right. Somebody's in their lair, and they don't know who's there. They're looking around, and they find Danny.
Yeah,
down there. The turtles are like, "Where'd you come from? What's going on?" And she's like, "Oh my God, your father's gonna friggin' kill you!" And she like fake slaps him across the face.
Yeah.
He's like, "This is bigger than what I thought. Like, I'm not gonna tell anybody. You gotta let me. You gotta help me. Blah blah blah." And I actually love that Casey Jones is like, wait, what's all this talk about spending the night down here? This is some bullshit.
Yeah.
Like,
he doesn't want to spend the night in the fucking sewer. So
you guys are all out of your fucking minds.
Again, it works well because, I mean, Danny, the important beats are Danny asks April if he can take one of the pictures she drew. So she gives him the Leonardo one. Casey Jones wanted to go, like, couldn't sleep in there. He was claustrophobic, so he had to go sleep in the truck, which actually is kind of funny because he's like, you're claustrophobic. He goes, don't you dare say that. I never ever looked at another guy, which was kind of funny because he didn't know what claustrophobic was. So then he goes up and he's laying in the truck. And the fact that they made him claustrophobic also works because he sees Danny leaving.
Yes.
And then he follows him to... I mean, I think Danny just had the urge to go see Splinter and try to make more sense out of his life.
That's right. Yeah, I think he needed to go see. Well, I mean, he's desperately in search of a father figure.
Yeah, big time.
And he's seeing that now where he did have it in sort of Tatsu / Shredder. He then gets it in a more meaningful form from Splinter. So he's going back to that because he's just yearning for that. That's what he needs, right?
Yeah. And I love when he goes back, and again, they do the exact same thing. He starts talking to Splinter, and Splinter starts telling him about his teacher, Yoshi, and the lights, all of the background lights dim behind Danny, and it goes black again. And then he's talking about his master, and he's like going, I was in my cage practicing martial arts. And that little puppet is just like flicking back and forth.
Dude, it's hilarious.
I think it's great. It's so stupid. I love it. He's like, I was in my cage. Yeah, I love this whole little replay thing.
And the little rat jumps flashback. Out and jumps on the guy's face and scratches it, and then he pushes the rat away and takes the swipe at it and cuts Splinter's ears off. Yeah, cuts his ear off.
How the fuck do you cut an ear off a rat?
It's impressive.
With a sword? Yeah, with a
sword. It's an
sword.
Impressive miss.
But I like he tells the story, and he's like, yeah, they decided to run away. They went to America. You know, Orokusaki, you know, comes to America, finds him. He's like, one day he was coming home from work, and they just have him, like, walking in wearing carrying a toolbox, lunchbox combo. and then he gets murdered, and Splinter attacks, shreds his face up, and loses an ear in the process.
It's pretty great.
It's actually good. I mean, it's very stage, theater setup, but I like it. I think it works.
Yeah, I like it too, and I like that Casey Jones gets in here. He follows Danny into the warehouse here and jumps one of the Foot Clan and takes his suit, and intercut with that is Splinter talking to Danny, and you know, Splinter gives him you're wearing that symbol on your head. Like, what are you doing with the headband? And he takes the headband off and drops it on the floor. And that's when Shredder and Tatsu come up. And he's like, what are you doing? He's all pissed at Danny for dropping the headband.
Yeah. If there was any time to remove the headband of Shredder and throw it on the floor and step on it, it would be the 3 seconds before Shredder turns the corner to see you do it. And that's exactly what happens. To poor Dan. I'm going to take a stand. Oh, fuck. Maybe I'm too young to take a stand.
Damn it.
Yeah, it's good.
It's good. I do like it. And I like that he takes, Shredder takes the picture from Danny here and sees the turtle. So now he's like, oh, okay. But then Casey jumps out and shows Danny that it's him. And now they realize, oh, my God, like they're in trouble. We got to go help the turtles. We got to help April. We got to help these guys. They know what's up. So all the Foot Clan is now going down into the sewer to go after the turtles, and like they're going down through the manholes and going down through the drainage valves, and they're pouring in.
Oh yeah, he's diving in like he's gonna assassinate Pennywise.
That's what I thought.
He just fucking dives in. I saw that and I was like, Jesus, look like he's going to fucking save Georgie.
Yeah, I just wanted Pennywise's face to be in there.
Yeah,
hilarious.
Fucking ninjas. Pennywise running.
You like ninjas?
We all got ninjas. We all flip down here. But yeah, then they. Yeah, they have a pretty cool fight scene. It's not one of my favorites, but it's done really well. Like, it's done well. Lots of good camera angles.
Well, they have another money-saving one with all the steam, where they steam them out, and you hear, wah-wah-wah-wah-wah, and they, like, drop, like, 12 of them.
Yeah.
Just to save some time. But then the other guys run in, and apparently this is the one, that's the one where I think it's Michelangelo drops them all those guys in the steam. And as he drops them all, he's finishing an apple. And
oh, that's Raph. Raph's like, goodness, I do hope there's more of them.
That's right. That's Raph. And that's a throwback to a deleted farm scene thing, because they were having a thing where they were trying to toss an apple. They were playing hot potato, but it was an apple, and they had to toss an apple back and forth and take a bite out of it while they were fighting all the other three ninjas off as a training exercise.
Oh, okay.
And that was a throwback to a deleted scene there. So, but it was supposed to pay off. It's still kind of cool, even without the throwback, because he beats the shit out of all of them.
Right.
And then the other ninja, the other Foot Clan guys come in and see all their buddies dropped. And they just kind of look around at all the bodies and they're like, oh, God damn it, really?
I do really like how Casey Jones goes to square up against Tatsu and gets his ass beat.
Yeah.
Right? Because he's just like, hey, pal, how you doing? Whack! And he just goes right to the ground. And then he just, like, stands up and he's like, hey, a little banaka might clean up your mouth, or Primatine, or whatever product he chooses. And then, boom, he gets knocked around. And it's only when he gets the golf club out. And Casey Jones has a thing where if he hits you, you lift up and go flying. And in my experience, I've never been able to make anybody leave the ground with no matter what I've hit them with. So
yeah, I've never been able to do that. But yeah, Tatsu immediately beats the living shit out of Casey Jones. Although I like that he punches him. Yeah. Casey falls down and he just gets back up like, hey man, you're not gonna do that again. Like super upset right away. Yeah, but Tatsu just whoops that ass. He has no truck for Casey Jones at all. But Casey doesn't give up. He's Cool Hand Luke here, man. He keeps getting up.
Oh yeah, he does a good job. Yeah, I enjoy it.
But this is where Casey Jones sees the golf club And is like, yes. Well, here we go. And dude, he hits Tatsu so fucking hard with this golf club.
Well, that's where he sends him flying. That's what I mean. Like, you know, you can't lift somebody off the
ground.
No, he'd
take his mandible off.
And he does it well. Yeah. It's, whoom, whoom, whoom. Standing there looking like fucking Dark Man in a kimono. But he takes him out, and that's when I think at that moment he's carrying he and Danny are carrying Splinter out. And I think that's where Sam Rockwell comes in, and he's like, hey, you're not leaving or whatever. And he's like, we're a family.
Casey Jones.
I love Casey Jones is just like points down to Tatsu, and he's like, that's your family? Like, this is your family?
Mind?
Like,
this is family? This is what you guys call family? You guys are out of your mind.
Yeah. And then they start to defend it, and like Casey Jones is like, the acting is really good here because he's so offended. He's just like, ugh, like my breath is wasted on these motherfuckers, and just like, you know, scoops him up and walks away. He's not even going to try to teach them, argue with them. Like he's just like, yeah, you know, fuck
but
this noise. And
it's good, man. Like you got off. Young version, like Elias Koteas is a great actor. Sam Rockwell's a fucking great actor. Like, you've got young versions of really, like, great actors here that have gone on to do tremendous things. And you're seeing that potential here, right?
Sam Rockwell can be absolutely hilarious. Like, Confessions of a Dangerous Mind.
That movie's amazing.
Brilliantly hilarious. And then you can see him doing something incredibly dramatic like he did in Moon, which...
He did Moon. He did The Green Mile. He was unbelievable in that.
Yeah.
You know, like, he's a tremendous actor. And to see him here, you really do see that potential.
Very much so.
And you get the fight scene here where they get up on the street. They do that back-to-back Shell Malachi Crunch here.
Yeah.
Malachi Crunch. Happy days. How old am I? Jesus Christ. Referencing a fucking 55-year-old television show. Yeah, they do that double shell back-to-back crunch here. There's a couple good bow staff things. They're quick with their hands. It impresses me how fast they fight in these suits. Like, I know it's a little sped up, but damn. It's pretty impressive, dude.
Yeah, I mean, okay, yeah, the sped up is one thing, but the lighting and the angles and the contact, like, it looks like they're making contact, especially when they are doing those goddamn wheel kicks, which...
Yeah, that's crazy.
Like, I have a hard time doing those now in my underwear, right?
Right?
Yeah, you know, and these guys are doing them like on point, you know, in a big full suit.
You give me a month to train and put me in spandex. Yeah, I could not do it as well as these guys do.
You know, why don't you goddamn blindfold me, give me about half of my air, right? Half of my oxygen intake. I really do. I like it, but I think I appreciate it more. Do you know what I mean? Like, I'm just...
Yeah.
I think I like it more. I think it's better than it may actually be because I can easily see the amount of work and dedication that they put into it, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And they do the cool little kid line here of when I think it's Mike, Michelangelo. He's about to go up the ladder and the one... foot guy comes up behind him with the axe and swings at his head, but he ducks his head in like the turtle.
Yeah, that
and
is
he misses
Michelangelo.
Him. He back fists him. Then he goes, "I love being a turtle.
I love being a turtle." Yeah,
you know, you can see that getting a bunch of cheers from all the 10-year-olds in the movie theater, right?
Oh yeah, that was like every kid said that 100 times from their theater seat to the walk back to the car. Like, you know that.
Yeah, it's awesome. And then you get another big rooftop fight scene here with a million Foot Clan and a couple, two or three turtles here beating ass on all these guys. And this, again, there's great kicks, good moves with the bow staff, turnaround kicks. The guys are doing backflips in the suits and shit. Like, it's...
Yeah.
Like, it's impressive, man, I'll tell you. Although Leonardo's swords are extremely dull.
Well.
Because he slices a lot of dudes, but there's zero blood and he doesn't cut anybody, which obviously you can't in a child's movie, but...
Yeah. Yeah,
you can't have like arms falling off and stuff like that would be terrible.
Well,
you can't
Carl
Weathers somebody's arm, you know.
Well, that's true. But also, like if somebody flipped the sword around and swung a katana into my head with like the blunt side of the blade, that would still kill me. So
I'd fall down and be very very hurt.
Yeah,
I do like when Shredder shows up here and he comes down and Donatello rubs the sweat off his head and goes, yeah, 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 like the Three Stooges.
Yeah, yeah, like Curly.
That cracks me up.
I actually like when Shredder shows up. I really dig his entrance because they finish with these guys and then, like, Shredder just slow motion jumps into the roof scene. And
yeah, this is a good fight here with these guys.
Yeah, and I like how, I mean, obviously four people attacking at once makes far more sense.
Way more sense than the wait your turn syndrome
thing
they're doing here.
They do this, but, I mean, it's an allegory for them all looking at themselves as individuals and not as a family.
Not as
so
a team. Yeah.
They do it that way. But I do like they were like, and now, I forget exactly what he says, but he's like, now you must face the Shredder. And they're all like, the Shredder? Okay, buddy. Like,
whatever.
I love how they all crack up, which is like, dude, 15-year-old you and me, like if a guy came up and said, by the way, now you must fight Broticus. We'd be like, Broticus, get bent, asshole. Like,
get the fuck out of here.
Get the fuck out of here.
Careful, I might fly away on my wings and shit. Like,
yeah. So...
yeah, it's funny, man. It's good. But this, they go back to the fight scene here.
Shredder beats the ass
off. Yeah, he's beating the shit out of these turtles, man. But I do like it, like his little pointy bow staff. One of them gets a hit. I think it's Leonardo gets a hit on Shredder's arm. He's the only guy that actually hits Shredder, if I'm not mistaken.
That makes sense.
But
I was going to say, I don't recall, but if anybody makes one hit, it's Leonardo.
Yeah, he gets him on the arm or something. And then Splinter shows up. And Shredder takes his mask off, and you see the scratches on his face, or the scars, I should say, where Splinter scratched him as a young boy, as a tiny little rat in a cage. And Shredder's like, we're going to finish what we started. And he runs at Splinter, and Splinter's just standing there, and he goes, nunchucks him over the edge, and like, fucking Shredder goes flying off the building.
Well,
he hits a fucking mini tramp.
Because he's... Splinter's standing on the edge of the building, and Shredder is like so goddamn pissed that he's got scars all over his face. He takes his spear and just charges towards the edge of the building, full fucking
speed.
Oh,
he does the Kato run at him.
He does the Kato run. Even if he hits Splinter with that, he's still going on.
Oh, yeah.
Like, he's not going to be able to stop himself. But yeah. Splinter just does like two twirls on the nunchucks and fucking sidesteps him, sends him over. He falls off the building, lands in the garbage truck, and then Casey Jones just goes, oops.
And crushes him, like at the end of Black Belt Jones.
To death. Yeah, right at the end of Black Belt Jones. It's great. I really, I like, if we back it up for a second, I do like how he amped them up and basically said that he killed Splinter.
Yes.
And Leo gets so furious that he charges him, and then he basically just, you know, sweeps him and says, you know, you guys throw all your fucking weapons away. And as soon as they do, he's like, you fool. Like, I could have killed this guy, and the three of you still could have won.
Right.
But now you don't have any weapons. Idiots. So I thought that was kind of like a cool little mind chess game that he played.
Yeah, it's good, man. There's, like, the writing is actually decent in this. Like, there's a reason why this movie... spawned all of those sequels, right? Like, it's good.
Yeah.
It's legitimately good. Like, when you look at the first one of any of the movies that have a lot of sequels, whatever it is, you know, think of the horror movies like Nightmare on Elm Street or Freddy or Jason or whatever.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They're all good. Yeah. The first ones are amazing.
Yeah.
So this is no exception to that. This is a good film. You know, all the Foot Clan guys are all getting arrested here. The cops all show up. April shows up. April's boss shows up here. Danny gets reunited with his dad, so we get that little reunion there. April, I believe, gets rehired, does she? Is that correct?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Chuck's like, hey, why don't you fucking cover this story?
Yeah.
And she's like, well, why don't you give me more money and a corner office and some fucking new shoes and a yellow jumpsuit? So she just kind of works her way into the, works her way back into it. Shredder is clearly dead.
Yeah, Shredder's, is it about my cube?
Is it about my cube? Yeah.
Your boss has been thrown from a building.
Shredder.
Your boss has been crushed into a cube.
You now have 15 minutes to leave your cube.
So yeah, the cop goes over and talks to some of the kids, and they have to talk to the cops, and Casey Jones shows up to talk to April, and we get kind of the wrap up here. Casey Jones kisses April, and woohoo, the turtles are all happy.
Yeah, and they're all doing their little catchphrases on the roof.
They're all kind of joined back up again, and that is a wrap on the turtles on the first one.
Well, you got to mention that the they drop in the old cowabunga.
Well, yeah, you can't.
They purposely avoided using it until the very end.
Until the last
and
thing.
He's just like, I've always liked cowabunga. And you know, all the kids in the theater probably were just like, yes, they
cowabunga! They said cowabunga! I love being a turtle!
And then we cut to organized crime with Turtle Power Song.
Which is a catchy-ass song,
credits.
Man.
It was a catchy-ass song because in 1990, me and one of our patrons drove to Montreal, and we had this on cassette. We had several, but he actually loved the TMNT 1990 soundtrack, and we blasted that many times on our drive to go seek out French ladies.
Yes. We should mention Corey Feldman was the voice of Donatello. That's another actor that went along. He was paid $1,500 to do this. Can you imagine?
Really?
That's it. The people that hired him were like, yeah, it's kind of a bit role, you know, not a lot of work. Yeah, you get $1,500, you know, it's pretty good. And he's like one of the main guys.
Jesus, it's a bit role.
Donna motherfucking Tello, like one of the main turtles, like the main guy. You're basically the star. Like, Jesus, we're just taking Corey Feldman to school. But yeah, this is a good flick, man. I can't slap this film down for anything. It's fun. It's a fun watch. This is one you can still watch with young kids or your, you know, teenage kids or whatever. And
yeah.
It might be a little dated with the suits and stuff, but it still holds up. You'd still certainly be able to have some fun watching it.
Yeah, some kids might not be crazy about it just because they're not used to seeing a guy in a fucking suit. But I still think it works. And, that's the thing with this film is it was good. And then I think going forward, I'm going to refer to this person as the dickhead in the boardroom.
Yeah.
Because they basically, it was the movie was solid. Like, I would have been very happy to see another one. But then, you know, they added in, no disrespect to Vanilla Ice, because I met him and he's fucking
awesome,
cool
awesome.
Shit. I love that guy. But I mean, you know, like they had Vanilla Ice with the Go Ninja Go. They had the big Pizza Hut promotion. You know, they said, okay, Ninja Turtles can't use weapons. You're only going to fight a little bit. Raphael, you're going to be happy now. You're going to be cracking jokes and kissing butterflies. Like, you know, they really, really pared it back. And it was all about mass appeal, massive amounts of money.
Which, to their credit, they made.
And they lost a lot.
They made a lot of money.
Oh, God, yeah. Yeah,
I should bring up here at the end here, the stunt coordinator and martial arts coordinator for this movie was the one and only Pat Johnson.
Oh, Pat Johnson.
Yeah.
Jeez, there's a guy that's just, whew, that guy's done a lot of good work.
He really has. There was an assistant martial arts consultant and a martial arts consultant. The martial arts consultant was Chun Wai Yuen, and the assistant to him was Tak Wai Liu. So,
nice.
Pretty great on that part. I want to read you something because this is fucking insane to me. Listen to this. I got this from IMDb. In the 1980s, the first pitch Kevin Eastman and Peter Laird got for a film treatment for this movie was from Schlockmeister Roger Corman's New World Pictures.
Oh,
the idea.
Oh, God. Roger Corman.
Listen to this idea. The idea was to have the Turtles played by four comedians who were popular at the time. Gallagher, Sam Kinison, Bobcat Goldthwait, and Billy Crystal.
Okay.
The actors would be... Hang on, I gotta finish this before we talk because this is fucking mental. The actors would be dressed in turtle shells and have their arms and legs painted green. Another treatment received at the same time took the turtles into R-rated territory and included a scene with partially nude nuns on roller skates fighting the heroes.
Oh.
Can you imagine Bobcat Goldthwait in a turtle shell with his arms painted green?
Honestly, I was picturing Sam Kinison with a fucking Marlboro hanging, like, it's not in his mouth, it's stuck to his bottom lip, and he's just like, what the fuck is that? That's Shredder. Shredder?
Who is that? That looks like Shredder. Shredder! Oh! Oh!
He's not a red. That's actually a Rokusaki! He killed Yoshi! He killed fucking Yoshi! Say it, you son of a bitch!
Can you imagine the Gallagher turtle have a big hammer?
The Gallagher, like, fuck. Gallagher,
that's
Billy
insane.
Crystal.
Insane.
Bob Goldthwait and Sam Kinison.
Yeah. Yeah. Can you imagine? Like, I half want to see that movie just to see what kind
curious.
Of train wreck it would be.
I am so fucking curious as to what that would be. Like, Billy Crystal? Like, such a weird choice. Such a weird choice, because he would have been coming off of that City Slickers. Well, not before 1990.
1990, God, I didn't
know. He'd been coming off Throw Mama from the Train. So he would have just been
walking around
like, well, I'm Leonardo. I run this groove with my crazy brothers. And hey, Leonardo, I think we're going to go up there and get some pizza on. You want to come by?
You were 2 minutes late with the pizza. would have been absolutely insane.
That would have been fucked up. Like, I can't even.
Fucked up.
Like, when you were talking, my mouth was just going, because my brain was trying to process it. Trying to process the fuck that would be.
Trying to figure out how those four guys would even work together. Like, there's no way you'd get Gallagher and Sam Kinison and Billy Crystal, you know, let alone Bob Goldthwait, to get along for like 2 or 3 months on a film shoot without hurting each other.
It doesn't make sense. It literally doesn't make sense.
Fucking Bob Goldthwait in like Police Academy, like coked out crazy Bob Goldthwait.
Out of his mind. With Jack Palance as fucking Shredder.
Right.
Pick up the katana.
That's nuts.
Fuck.
All right, let's roll through these categories. What do you think for... This is going to be a hard one because, like... Okay, soundtrack's pretty straightforward because it's pretty good. Soundtrack's good. Like, for me, I would put soundtrack and Foley and stuff like that, like all the sound. Probably like a four-fifths out of five. Like, it's good, man.
Yeah, I'm 100% four-fifths out of five. Like, I knew that before I did the rewatch, just because the soundtrack is great, the Foley is great. They do moments where like the music is blasting, but then it'll fade out so you can have like conversations.
Yeah.
It's good. So yeah, 4/5 out of five for music and Foley.
Acting. What do you think acting?
Acting, I thought the acting was solid. They did I'm going 4/5 out of five for acting as well. Tonally, this is one of the things that I find is difficult for films to do is tonally, this film is consistent from start to finish.
Yep.
And despite the fact that they're dealing with some material that's a bit corny, they did an excellent, excellent job at doing the goofy, funny action sequences. But they also took the time to do some really good character building in this.
Yep.
And everybody did a good job in those moments. So 4/5 out of five as well.
Yeah, I'm actually going the same, 4/5 out of five, because all of the human actors do a good job. And like we just said, there's young versions of extremely good actors here showing that promise.
Yes.
And taking the roles seriously and doing what they need to do. So all the human actors are good. And then they went to Jim Henson Studios to do the puppeteering and stuff. And I mean, if you look at the Muppet movies, like that's all puppets on dudes' hands. And they draw out that emotion. And they knew that they could get that from Henson Studios.
Yeah.
Even though Jim Henson wasn't super comfortable with the violence in these movies. But again, like, dude, it's not that violent when you really
think about
it. Yeah,
you made the Dark Crystal, for fuck's sake. Those things scared
the
shit
out
of me.
Yeah, shut up, man. Scared the piss out of me, those fucking Skeksis. Jesus Christ.
Even the moment, because I consider this acting, too, because you're doing a performance. When Shredder, pre-mutated Shredder, Yoshi's on the floor... And little Shredder is stroking Yoshi's dead thumb. Like, that's very touching, too. Like, that's...
Well, that's very Lion King, my dad's dead kind of thing,
and
right?
This is a movie about dads, but, he's stroking his thumb, and he looks sad. And somebody is operating a puppet to make that puppet look sad, and through a fucking screen, 30 fucking years later, make me feel sad. So,
and
solid.
It still comes through. Yeah.
Yeah. Still comes through.
Yeah. Martial arts. I'm still going pretty high for martial arts too. Like, I'm probably honestly going to stay consistent and be 4 fifths out of 5 for martial arts, because even though it's a child's movie, or for at least a young teenage type movie, the martial arts and the level of contact and things like that, it's consistent with that type of movie that it should be. And it plays mm-hmm. that kind of contact and nonviolence of, you know, like we said, no blood, no arms coming off. But it's solid. And the guys in the suits do a really, really good job.
Yeah, I'm going to give it the highest. I'm going to go 5.
Nice.
5 fifths out of 5. And I'm not giving it because I think it's the best martial arts I've ever seen. I'm giving it 5 fifths out of 5 because they sought out to deliver something, and they did it. They did it in spades. The fact that they had the martial arts look realistic while they're wearing these fucking 150-pound suits, and they didn't compromise.
Yeah,
I'm gonna give them the full marks, 5 fifths out of 5.
Nice. Well, it's very similar to Karate Kid, where we talked about the martial arts aren't the best in the world, but as martial arts movies go, it's the best. It's fucking awesome.
Yeah, so, like, martial arts are part of the story, and they wove it in there incredibly well. So, yeah.
Yeah, abso-friggin-lutely. would Sammo Hung make this movie better?
I think that if you were going to bring Sammo Hung into this film, I think he could have been... I'm going to say no on this film because it's the first one. But when you yep. get into some of the other Ninja Turtle characters,
yep.
Sammo Hung would be perfect to bring in. So I'm going to say no on this one because I think I would use him in part two for, I mean, you've got all those other guys. You got Bebop, Rocksteady, you got that fucking rabbit. Like, there's all kinds of great characters, and I think Sammo Hung would be perfect for one of those.
Yeah, I can't think of a spot to put him in here where he would have made it better. Possibly Tatsu.
Possibly,
you could
yeah.
have made him Tatsu, maybe, but I really liked Toshishiro Obata's performance in this.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of hesitant to put him in there even so. I don't think there were any defenestrations.
I don't
remember any.
Well, the skylight that they throw Raphael through.
So oh, that's okay. That, so one. Yeah. Let's call that one then.
Yeah.
One's good. All right. So one defenestration, no Sammo Hung. Would William Hung make this worse? Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, 100%, no matter where you put him. In here,
no matter
it would probably be worse,
where
right?
Where you put him. William Hung is Danny, which would be hilarious. Danny, leave me alone. You don't understand what I'm going through. Danny, come back.
That'd be friggin' hilarious. All right, that's a wrap on 1990s Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, the first one. I'm excited for next week, dude. Next week, we're flying backwards. Flying back to 1984, and speaking of Sammo Hung, he directed this next little flick we're going to be doing.
Oh, fuck,
and that
we're
is
doing
1984's
Wheels on Meals.
Wheels on Meals, baby.
Yeah, I forget, like, every, like, as soon as, for some reason, as soon as I start a podcast with you, like, by the end of it, I have no idea what I'm doing the following week, and you're like, we're going back in time. I'm like, are we, what's this guy talking about? You're like, oh, yeah, Sammo Hung. Yeah, this is awesome. This movie has one fight scene alone that kicks the shit of some of the movies that we've reviewed so far. Like, that one fight scene. So I'm excited about that. Really excited.
Yeah, man. This is going to be fun. I'm really excited to hit this one. I haven't seen this movie before, so I'm looking forward to watching it a couple of times and talking about it next week. So, yeah, coming up next week, 1984, Wheels on Meals on You Have Offended This Podcast.